morning, everybody. This meeting is called to order at 9:04 a.m. on May 24, 2012. Before we proceed with business, Mr. Smith has a statement to make or read.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to read it. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I'd like for this fact to be noted to the official record of the meeting. I want to join the chairman and the commission on welcoming everybody. Looks like we've got a full house today. We're going to kick off the meeting this morning with some special awards and acknowledgments and service awards. And so we've got a full house. People have come from near and far to participate in that. We're delighted you're here. That's going to take up the first part of the meeting. And so after we're done with that element of the commission meeting, the chairman will call for a brief recess. So for those of you who don't want to stay for the remainder of the meeting, can go ahead and leave and head on back home or wherever you're going, some of you back to your duty stations. Just a quick reminder, as you probably gathered, the acoustics in this room are not good. And so I just respectfully ask, if you've got a conversation to have, if you don't mind stepping outside, if you've got a cell phone or pager, if you don't mind putting that on silent, that would be a big help. For those of you who are going to stay for the commission meeting after the service awards, we'll have a couple of action items in which the commission will take testimony. If you plan to testify on any item, I want to make sure that you signed up outside. At the appropriate time, the chairman will call you forward. He'll ask you to come forward. You'll have 3 minutes to address the commission and share your position on the matter. We will keep time. Green means go. Yellow means wind it down. And when it hits red, we're going to hit the trap door. So wind it up there. So thanks for joining us. Appreciate y'all coming to the commission meeting today. Mr. Chairman.
All right. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the previous commission meeting held March 29, 2012, which have been distributed. Is there a motion for approval? Commissioner Martin.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Shaw. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next is an acknowledgement of the list of donations, which has also been distributed. Is there a motion for approval? Mr. Hughes. Second by Commissioner Shaw. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Now we go to special recognitions and service awards. All right, Mr. Smith.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Like a nervous colonel behind you.
It's, yeah, we better be. We're going to make it sweat for a little while, too, if that's all right with you, Chairman. You leave us alone for 1 minute, Pete, and look what happens. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, for the record, my name is Carter Smith. We're going to start off with a couple of some wonderful grants that some partners are providing to the agency, and we want to celebrate those. And it's fitting that we're starting with the Dallas Safari Club. Dallas Safari Club been one of our absolute best partners, long-standing funders of our Operation Game Thief and our program and our game wardens. They've been behind the Bighorn Sheep program in West Texas for a long, long time and provided critical funding for that. And this year, they wanted to go a little extra, and their year is off to a very good start. I hope some of you made it up to their annual convention in Dallas in January. It's a wonderful gathering. And this year they've got a special $60,000 gift that they are making to the department that's going to go to help support leasing of land for public hunting, to support our drone hunting programs, youth outreach and communication, Operation Game Thief program, and our state parks program. And so we've got Ben Carter, who's the executive director of the Dallas Safari Club, with us today. And I want to ask Ben to come forward. And so let's give him a round of applause.
As Herb mentioned, Dallas Safari Club has been a long-time partner with Texas Parks and Wildlife and a proud partner of Texas Parks and Wildlife. We were one of the founding sponsors of the Operation Game Thief. We have purchased over the last number of years a life insurance policy for each of our game wardens out there, and unfortunately we've had to use that too many times. But also another thing that we're really proud of is our partnership with Texas Parks and Wildlife on our outdoor education program. We're now in over 120 schools in Texas, and we're impacting over 15,000 kids a year with getting outdoor education. And I think that's critical to the state of Texas, as well as our country, that if we don't develop the next generation of outdoorsmen and people that care about what we care about, we're all going to be in trouble. Again, as Carter said, we had a very successful convention this year, and we'd like to support those that believe like we do. Texas Parks and Wildlife has been a great partner, and we've got a check here for $50,000. We gave one at our convention for $10,000, and then we also support Operation Game Thief for $7,500. So this year we've given Texas Parks and Wildlife $67,750, and we're glad to do it. Hope we can do more next year.
And we're counting, Ben. Thanks. Following on the heels of that, it's awfully nice that we've got a private company that has voluntarily come forward to help support our state parks program, and it's no surprise. For those of you who know Whole Earth Provision Company, if you're in the market and wanting to have anything to do with the outdoors, camping and hiking and rappelling and mountain biking and skiing, anything outside, it's the go-to place here in Austin. They've opened up stores in the Quarry in San Antonio and Houston in San Antonio. Their employees care passionately about our state parks, are great users of them. The owners have long-standing connections to the state park system. In fact, one of their cousins, Tommy Sargent, an old ranger from Brackettville, made the bargain sale to the department in the 80s to create Kickapoo Caverns State Park. And so they still have a family reunion out at the state park every year and celebrate their family's ties and heritage. They recognize that the state parks needed some help this year. And so Whole Earth kicked off a couple of events. One, every year they sponsor the Banff Mountain Film Festival in Austin, which is a two-night deal down at the Paramount in which they have documentaries and adventure outdoor action films of just some amazing feats of kayaking and downhill skiing and rappelling, which is just extraordinary. And the proceeds from that event dedicated to state parks. April was State Parks Month there at Whole Earth Provision Company, and so people that came in and made a contribution to support state parks, they had bought a gift certificate to help for those folks to thank them, and so then they could go out and use in state parks. So just wonderful partners, and we've got the Jones family here who were the owners of Whole Earth, and I think we've got some of their colleagues there. I think Marie Friday, their social media maven, she was behind getting all the word out on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook about the partnership. Alicia Sullivan, who's our marketing manager, and Holland Jones. And so I want to ask them to come forward as they present this contribution to your state parks. Let's thank Whole Earth Provision Company. So.
I just want to say that we had a great time working with Parks and Wildlife, and we look forward to doing it again.
Wonderful.
Yeah. That's good.
Try getting the pipe over. All right, folks, a couple shots here real quick. Right here, please.
One
more.
Scott, as y'all know, one of our core functions in law enforcement has to do with water safety and boater safety. And on a more somber note, we have with us the parents and brother of Scott Friend. Scott lost his life very tragically in 2010 in a boating accident. And in a way to help cope with their grief and their tremendous loss, they started a foundation in his honor that dedicated to help supporting first responders, boating safety officials, law enforcement officials to help make our waters more safe for people to enjoy. And it's a great testament and tribute to their family member who perished. This year, the Parks and Wildlife is a beneficiary, or one of the beneficiaries of their generosity and recognition in honor of Scott. In the last session, HB 673 from Representative Parker was passed, which required Parks and Wildlife to produce a water safety video for every single person going through driver's ed. So every young person going and taking that course, over 200,000 a year, will now be exposed to a video on water safety. It is spot on in terms of our target of who we want to influence with respect to messages about water safety. And a couple of months ago, Representative Lyle Larson from San Antonio called and told our team about the Friend Family Foundation and said that there may be a partnership here with the department. And so our team from communication and law enforcement met with the family. They're graciously providing a $20,000 gift to help fund the production of this video, which again will be seen by over 200,000 students a year. We're very blessed to have with us today Scott's brother Matt and his parents Robert and George Ann. Let's welcome them.
Wildlife for a long time, but never more than when they helped us with our son's tragic accident. And I just wanted you all to know how important it is to the families for all you do. And we thank you very much.
Fitting succession, I think, to that. Each year, our law enforcement division honors a Texas State Marine Officer of the Year Award. And it's in recognition and honor, really, of an officer who has gone above and beyond the call of duty to help make our waters safe, our boaters, our anglers, and everybody who enjoys the great outdoors, and making sure that they're enjoying it safely, responsibly, legally, and ethically. And could not be more proud, in fact, that this year, one of our very own, Game Warden Michael Hummer, who is stationed up in Grayson County, did a tour of duty down in Webb County, Commissioner, before he moved up to Lake Texoma and Grayson County, where he has just done extraordinary things on the water. Really been on the cutting edge of helping to innovate on addressing BWI issues on the lake. In a short time there, he has made 6 BWI convictions, including catching one gentleman who had 9 convictions for DWI, somebody who obviously should not have been behind the wheel of a boat. He was instrumental in saving the life of a man who was thrown from a boat in a terrible accident and who had broken his neck and was in the water. He kept him afloat until Life Flight could be there. Not only has he had to save people, but he's also had the very, very difficult circumstance of having to recover people as well. And was instrumental after just an exhausted 2-year search of having to recover the body of a 12-year-old child. Michael has just given generously of his talents to the agency. The partners up there love him for his work up there. Very instrumental in protecting waterfowl and migratory bird habitat. Also works very closely with the Boy Scouts in educational efforts and their Safety at Sea program, where he educates Boy Scouts about the importance of safety on the water. He's also a great ambassador for this department, a wonderful spokesperson, and frequently someone who's out front speaking on behalf of boating safely and responsibly. My great privilege to welcome Game Warden Michael Hummer. Michael. Retirement and Service Awards, and I want to start off with one retirement. We'll come back to another maybe a little later on in the program. We want to start off with one of our colleagues who's retired from our Infrastructure Division, ML Hill, and Marvin L. Hill. He started with our FORCE account, which is our teams in infrastructure, which go around the state working on special projects. This is an amazing group of craftsmen. They can build anything. They can fix anything. They're masters at historical architecture. He worked with the FORCE account team for a number of years, and he went on to become assistant superintendent at Garner State Park, a pretty good gig, if I have to say so myself. Then he went back and led his own FORCE account team for 18 years and then was over in Tyler as a construction supervisor, recently retired from the agency with 31 years of service. ML Hill, let's thank him. The agency, and we're going to start off, and I think it's fitting in Inland Fisheries. Eduardo Nunez is the longest serving fish and wildlife technician in the department. Been with us for 45 years in Inland Fisheries. Started up there in Grayford in Possum Kingdom at the fish hatchery when that was just basically dirt tanks and an old storage building. That facility, our fisheries biologist will tell you, has come a long, long way. And I think what's so remarkable in his 45 years, he's really become kind of the godfather of striper fishing in the fishery in the state, very involved in collecting stripers at Lake Livingston and at other lakes around the state, bringing them over to the hatchery there at PK, raised them out. In his tenure, he has helped spawn and hatch and stock. What is the number? 160 million fish during his time. So all of us who care about angling owe Ed a big debt of gratitude. Also, I noticed that during this time period, I think he has lived through 5, 6, maybe 7 different hatchery managers during that time. I think he's probably got them all trained, and no doubt he is following that age-old mantra that Al Bingham teaches every one of our new employees, and if you don't like the supervisors, all you got to do is just outlive the bastards. And 45 years of service. Our next colleague has been with our state parks program for four decades, 40 years, Betty Johnson, and started with Parks and Wildlife as kind of clerical support for the finance division, promoted to secretary for the accounting branch, and then she transferred over to the San Jacinto Battleground and was the office manager there in 1981. Not surprisingly, she got promoted to the regional office manager. And has, like so many people in the agency, gradually and progressively taken on more duties and responsibilities. She's our regional administrative specialist and handles all of the budgets, all the administrative stuff, you name it, for Justin Rhodes and his team of over a dozen parks and 200 park employees in that part of the state. Justin describes her as an angel in disguise, always there to solve any problem. Lend a shoulder when he needs someone to cry on, apparently. Apparently, she's always quick with a jar full of M&Ms if he needs a little energy during the day as well. Also, I hope Commissioner Jones will appreciate this. She recently went through the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program. And so, mission is near and dear to her heart. So, Betty Johnson, 40 years of service. Thank you. Has been with us for 25 years, all up in God's country there at Sabine Lake, right there on the Louisiana border near Port Arthur and Beaumont, home to one of the finest oyster reefs in all the Western Hemisphere, and started out as a resource technician for us in coastal fisheries, and again, gradually took on more and more responsibilities, doing all the krill data, responsible for managing and analyzing all of the harvest data for our coastal fisheries team and that ecosystem. Right now, he's the safety officer, lab editor, coordinates all the data flow. He volunteers with local groups, very involved in the Saltwater Anglers League of Texas tournament, Commissioner, you may be familiar with, down every Memorial Day. And also, I noted he's the unofficial head of the Sabine Lake Field Station's Entertainment Committee. I will leave that to your imagination, but I expect it has something to do with oysters and crawfish and shrimp and blue crab. So, 25 years of service. Mark Foreman. Mark. Cindy Leffler has been kind of the face of water for this agency for 25 years, and she's an engineer by vocation, came to us after working for the Fish and Wildlife Service for 3 years, graduated from Colorado State, and she was hired really as a hydrologist for the agency to help develop the Parks and Wildlife Department's in-stream flows and work with the team to characterize and categorize how much in-stream flows that we need to support our bays and estuaries to keep them healthy, so that Mark has got plenty of shrimp and blue crabs and oysters to cook for his buddies up in Sabine Lake. So Cindy has just labored tirelessly in that effort, right in the middle of all of the water stuff. Very difficult job, as all of you know, with respect to water-related issues in the state. She's our water resources branch chief, our representative on the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation team that y'all have heard so much about. She sits on the Texas Water Conservation Advisory Council and the Governor's Commission for Women in State Government. Awfully proud to honor Cindy Leffler for 25 years of service. argue that there are things that we can do without around here, but I can assure you telephones are not one of them. And Jim Burney is our guy with our IT team. Jim has been with us for 25 years, started off in the radio shop, became the head of really that group, helping to service radios across the state, our game wardens, park peace officers, park staff, wildlife biologists, fisheries biologists, everybody who needs that to communicate. And then eventually, he ended up moving over to information technology under George Rios' group, where he became our telecommunications specialist. Everybody around here knows him as just one of those great, solid, dependable guys, known as the phone guy. You need anything with your telephone, your headset, your computer, your conference phone. Jim always gets a call, and he always answers. 25 years of service. Jim Burney. Let's thank him. Also with Inland Fisheries, and we've honored several with that program today, Michelle Nations. She's our staff services officer up at Draper there at Possum Kingdom. She's been with us 25 years. She started as a fish and wildlife technician up at the Dundee State Fish Hatchery there up in Electra. Then she moved on to work for the regional office, and then transferred over to PK back in 2003 to work there. She's got a great skill with databases. She's very technologically literate and helped to maintain all of their budget stuff and fisheries-related databases. She's helped the Freshwater Fisheries Center with databases so that they can track funds that come in to support that program. She also helped one of our colleagues in state parks, Jeff Sparks, create a database to help track firefighters or their equipment and fires they've been on and training certification. She's also a certified Texas purchaser and involved in purchasing channel catfish for the neighborhood fishing program. She's an accomplished photographer, historian. She's very involved with the Texas chapter of the American Fisheries Society. Been with us for 25 years. Michelle Nations. Michelle. Testament to that division and the tenure that we have with our colleagues who work in that program, Roy Kleinsesser, and really one of the state's premier aquatic biologists working on the health of rivers and streams and fisheries and aquatic organisms that depend upon the water quality and quantity in our rivers and streams. He started in 1987 with us as an aquatic biologist, became the program leader over the Fishkill Investigative Program, and ultimately ended up heading up the River Studies Program. I think he got maybe like others a little tired of all the management administrative stuff, wanted to go back to being a biologist, who can blame him for that, and went back full time working on stream and river issues throughout the state. He's done a great job. 25 years of service, Roy Kleinsesser. Roy. Is from our infrastructure team, Mark Lacey, and he's been a surveyor with us for 25 years. He began his career in 1987 as a rod man on a three-man survey crew. Mark spends 80 to 90, 95% of his time on the road for the agency as a surveyor, documenting things at WMAs and fish hatcheries and state parks and state natural areas. One of his first projects was working with Ducks Unlimited, serving surveying new levees to build wetlands there at Catfish Creek at the Gus Engling WMA. He moved up to head up the responsibility of being our lead surveyor. He's become an expert in precision GPS and robotic surveying. Again, been a part of every park and WMA in the state. Awfully proud to have someone of his talents on our team. Mark Lacy, 25 years of service. Mark. Team 25 years ago there on the Guadalupe River in 1997. Commissioner Hickson, she was temporarily assigned to Government Canyon for 2 months to help get that park up and running. 14 years later, Deirdre was still there leading the charge, to say the least. And I want to assure you she accomplished a lot in those 14 years. Deirdre, really better than just about anyone, recognizes the value and importance of community-based conservation, and that Government Canyon is not only an extraordinary park and natural area in and of itself, but it's essential to the health and vitality of the entire San Antonio region. She really become a go-to person in San Antonio, people looking to her for leadership on conservation. The city looked to her to help guide efforts to strategically invest funds, to invest over the Edwards Aquifer recharge zone to protect the water quality for the seventh largest city in the United States. She's just incredibly well respected. I can't emphasize that enough. In June 2011, she moved out to Fort Davis, where she was promoted to be the regional director out there in God's country. We get occasional emails, always with the name of Thelma from the West. Thelma keeps us well informed, let me assure you. So, 25 years of service, Deirdre Heisler. Deirdre. Another one of our very dedicated and hard work involved just work to protect the health of our rivers and creeks and streams. Gordon Lyman started off, like Roy, as an aquatic biologist, moved over to the River Studies program. And really, Gordon has had a chance to work in every single river basin of the state, working on environmental flows and fish kill related issues. When we had a big fish kill up in the Trinity River, downstream of Dallas in the 1980s. He was our point person working on that, very involved working on fish kills in the Pecos River associated with the occasional golden algal blooms that we get in that system. Gordon was responsible for developing biological indices for evaluating stream fish communities as a way to help gauge the health of water quality in streams that were ultimately adopted by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Very involved in stream flow studies on the Colorado and San Antonio River. Also, when the state was looking at the impacts from off-road vehicles to riverbeds and streams, Gordon was on point for helping to document some of those impacts. And awfully proud of his 25 years of service, Gordon Lyman. Gordon. next colleague that we're gonna honor, no stranger again to this group, Tom Harvey. Tom had been with us for 20 years, one of the faces and voices of this organization, literally involved in about every single thing we do. He's kind of a spokesperson for the agency. Began his career leading the news and information branch, which he did for over 15 years, and did an extraordinary job responsible for really creating and building several important programs that we have for getting the word out, our news video release program, so that news stations just have really things in the can that they can put on the TV stations to help promote things of interest to the department. He was responsible for starting Passport to Texas radio series, which is that 90-second feature, which is on, you know, well over 100 radio stations every day. In 2010, when the communications division was reorganized, he was tapped to lead the media communications group. And so he oversees that extraordinary group of storytellers in the magazine, the radio, the TV program, and our social media program, which has become such an important element of it. Tom has just got a great sense of humor, a wonderful sense of life, and he's just a great colleague. Awfully proud of him. 20 years of service. Tom Harvey. Tom. Happens to be an old personal friend, and I'm tickled to death to be able to recognize him today, Dale Schmidt, with 20 years of service to the Wildlife Division. Dale is our wildlife technician up in Llano in San Saba County. He actually started in 1992 as a seasonal, I didn't know this, seasonal reservation clerk at Inks Lake State Park. On day two, I think Paul Kieselbrand, who was the superintendent at the time before he moved to Eisenhower, recognized that Dale was one heck of a good welder. And so Dale immediately went to the shop working on welding stuff. I'm not sure Dale made one single reservation in his job. After a year, Dale transferred over to the Wildlife Division, working in Bell and Coryell counties. Moved up to Llano in San Saba County, where he works very cooperatively and closely with private landowners and ranchers there, providing counsel and guidance on their wildlife management needs. I frequently run into people that have land up there that are just very, very complimentary of Dale and his professionalism and the service that he provides. Awfully proud of him. 20 years of service, Dale Schmidt. Dale. Do this next one. 27 years ago, we hired a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young Aggie. Are there any other kinds? Let me ask that. Oh God, there's somebody cared about that once again. Came out of Laredo as a young man, inspired to become a game warden by the way, a game warden, I think, gave him a ticket for not having a fishing license, or at least a good lecture.
Well, you never give people tickets, you've got to earn them.
You've got to earn them, that's right. He earned that ticket. And a whole passion, the Game Warden Training Center, right out of A&M, and that was when the training center was right there on the edge of the University of Texas campus. As Pete liked to say, the first time he ever saw Hunter Orange was on the mohawk of a UT student living next door to the academy. I figured you Aggies would appreciate that. When Pete got out of the academy, he was stationed over in Chambers County working in the marshes with a fair amount of job security down in Chambers County. How about that? Then was quickly promoted to captain over in Beaumont and San Antonio, became the major in San Angelo, promoted to the lieutenant colonel, just obviously worked his way up very, very quickly. In 2005, he was promoted to colonel of this fine agency. And I think you all know Pete very, very well. He's been an incredibly outspoken proponent of our mission. He's been an incredibly outspoken proponent of the North American model for wildlife conservation and the public trust doctrine and the stewardship and fiduciary responsibilities we have to protect the public's fish and game from harm. He has done an incredible job of helping to make our law enforcement division the most contemporary, the most modern, really in all the country, if not the world. He's reshaped that. He and his leadership team have invested very heavily in equipment and training to make sure our game wardens are as well equipped and as well armed and as well trained as they can possibly be. That legacy is going to be well carried on by Pete's vision to create the new game warden training center. And Hamilton, as you all know, modeled after the old frontier forts, the premier academy, really, in all of the world. He's built an extraordinary relationship with other agencies, positioned us well to assist wherever needed on border security-related issues, and capitalized on funding opportunities to help this fine agency, make sure that everybody knows that our state game wardens are the law off the pavement. Pete is awfully proud of the extraordinary service of the men and women that work for him. And all of you know Pete so well. We could go on and on. I know you also know from, 7 years, Pete sitting in that exact same chair. Pete does not miss a beat. I mean, I'm telling you, he's taking in every single thing going on in this room. Does not like to be surprised. Nothing rarely gets past him. I will say that after he announced his retirement, things have gone to hell in a handbasket. Literally, the first week after he announced it, I'm driving home from work, and I get a phone call from some guy who says he's with Bill O'Reilly and Fox News, wanting to know if it was true that our game wardens had said that it's okay to hunt Bigfoot in Texas. Went on to say something about that our game warden said something, well, it was an indigenous cryptid and therefore was not protected. And I said, pal, let me tell you, our game wardens know a lot of words. And they know a lot of colorful words. But indigenous cryptid ain't one of them. Pete left us alone for one night last night, and God almighty, our game wardens and park peace officer get involved in having to break up a drunken brawl on 6th Street. And I need to correct the record, because last time we were here and we talked about that milkshake-drinking bunch of cops that work for the officers, for the agency, let me tell you, don't let those milkshakes fool you. These boys and girls can kick some ass. And back to Pete not liking to be surprised. One of the things I've loved about it, the last 3 days, one of his dear friends and colleagues has just been hiding in plain sight all over the place with none other than who? Craig Hunter, of course. Gene Elms, the colonel of Arizona. He's been here. Pete, he's flown one of your helicopters. He's shot one of your machine guns. He's addressed the Game Warden Academy. He's had dinner with the commission. He broke up the bar fight. And he's here today on behalf of the North American Conservation Law Enforcement Chief to honor Pete for his extraordinary legacy. And let's give Gene, who's the chief there in Arizona, has been for 5 years, graduate of the FBI National Academy, went through with one of our very own, Captain David Murray. Gene's come all the way from Arizona to be with us. He's had a great and very, very memorable time in Texas. Let's give him a Texas round of applause.
Thank you for this opportunity to come and, ever since I've known you, you said come to Texas, we'll treat you right. And it did disappoint. I told Craig that if you're going to ever have an opening in the executive protection team, let me know. When I got here on Tuesday, I I guess, first of all, it's probably good that Pete's retiring. I've been here for 3 days, and he hasn't known anything about it. I think he lost his edge just a little bit. I got here on Tuesday. I was all excited. I took the award out of my suitcase. And it was about 8 pieces. And I think they used it to chalk the wheel on the airplane. So I asked myself, what would Pete do? And so I made a phone call and made a couple and got another one shipped. And in fact, I was going to give the headless version today, but I decided I thought that would be inappropriate. So we managed to get it all together in game word and fashion, and we got it to present. Wrote down a few words, and I'll share those with you on behalf of NACLAC and the law enforcement chiefs across this country. Colonel Pete Flores has been a visionary leader in conservation law enforcement community. His ability to see new opportunities, motivate people to seize them. He's balanced traditional role of game warden with responding and adapting to new challenges. He understands the importance of the public safety support and the critical role they have in the success of our mission. He cares deeply about the people, his agency, and has been a great asset to the institution of fish and wildlife law enforcement across the country. For the last 8 years, Pete has been a leader in the national, on the national level as well. From Maine to California, Pete has been a mentor to new chiefs. He has shared his unyielding commitment to conservation and law enforcement and has motivated many to do more, often with less. Yesterday, I visited the Hallowed Grounds north of here and spoke to the new warden recruits. One of the topics we discussed related to qualities of a good leader: integrity, honor, mentor, servant, professional, positive attitude, accountable, communicator. Originally, I thought these attributes came from a scholarly research, but now that I've had time to reflect, I believe the researcher followed Pete around for a day. On a personal note, I have known Pete for about 5 years and consider him a positive role model in my life and a mentor and friend. His humble approach is his approach to his profession, his ability to work a room in the name of conservation law enforcement is unlike any I've ever seen. I think most of you in this room will recognize the following phrase: "Brother, how can I help you?" Pete, all I can say is you have, and thank you. I would also like to thank Craig Hunter and the Executive Protection Team. Although Pete did not know I was here, he would have been very proud. I have had nothing but first-class treatment since I've been in this great state. On behalf of the National Association of Conservation Law Enforcement Chiefs, I would like to present Colonel Pete Flores with our first ever Legacy Award.
Thank you, Jeannie, and thanks for coming down from Arizona. That was great. We do have a couple of other gifts for Pete that we want to share, and the first one really, I'm giving on behalf of the 532 men and women that proudly wear the blue badge of your Texas State Game Wardens. And every one of the warden's greatest fears in life is to be invited to lunch by Pete Flores. There was a time not long ago in which a certain cadet with, and I'll just leave it at this, considerable name recognition was struggling to get through the academy. And it was just clear that just that individual was not going to be able to make it. And so Pete went in to see my predecessor, Bob Cook, and said, you know, this is going to be tough. You know, how do you want me? What do you want me to do? And Bob said, God, Pete, you know, if you're going to have to ask him to leave the academy, you know, at least take him to lunch. And so Pete said, got it. Pete, being one of the last big spenders, took him to Whataburger. Meal. And so every warden lives in death fear that Pete is going to invite him to lunch for Whataburger. Pete, on behalf of your game wardens, they're going to beat you to the punch on this one. Here's your Whataburger card. So, now, Pete, also, because we remembered that fishing story, there were a lot of us that were awfully concerned about what would happen to this. And so, on behalf of all of us at Parks and Wildlife, Scott and Gene and Ross and the Commission and the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, we're very honored and proud to present Pete Flores with a lifetime hunting and fishing license. So, Pete Flores.
Thank you all very much. I'm not going to have much to say for the first time, but what a great outfit. What a great mission. And thank you all for what you do and your service and for keeping Texas wildlife resources for Texans, always. And we believe in that deeply. I can't do anything by myself. Do it with yourself and the people, my staff, people in our offices, and the wardens, the people that wear the blue badge. You know, I got my pinned right there, right about there, by Chester Burdett. And I went to Anahuac, and I've learned a lot since Anahuac. I'll share some of my first couple of lessons there. Well, I was at the Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge one night because the most piece of old boys catching redfish off the trot lines. And me being the 25-year-old, freshly minted game warden, went down there to my blue Dodge Diplomat with a big blue emblem that said Texas Parks and Wildlife. And of course, those of us that know the marsh know there's certain things you don't do in that country. But I didn't know that. I rolled up next to them and opened up the door to that car. I wanted to see the emblem, you see. I wanted to see it. Game warden. Went and did my thing. Well, little did I know that the dome light stayed on in that car. And every biting insect within 50 miles was in there. It was like a deep woods commercial. I learned my lesson. You also need to learn about your equipment and how things work, and you need, and anything that we do in our job, the vernacular, for lack of better words. And as a young rookie, well, you know, we had the radios back then, they stacked about that high. And, of course, whenever you run a subject and they have warrants, the dispatcher will ask you if your radio is secure. And we all know what that means. It's, they're not around to listen. Well, as a rookie, I said, let me check. So I shake the radio. And boy, my radio is secure. But I did that in front of a witness, so that will never die. But great adventures. I've learned a lot. Travel all over, had the opportunity to work all over the state, from one side to the other. All the different cultures, all the beliefs, but everything has been good. And thank you very much for the opportunity and privilege.
Thank you.
about it. But I'll show you. All right. Editor!
Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, that completes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Might the record reflect that the drunken brawl on 6th Street this time did not involve the commissioners?
That's for the record. This is what Mr. Schmidt does to All right. At this time, I'd like to inform the audience that everyone is welcome to stay for the remainder of the meeting, but if you wish to leave, this would be an appropriate time to do so. Yes, sir.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. I'll let you know if I'm coming. Okay.
For our new Director of Internal Audit. After a very exhaustive and extensive search, we were able to narrow the field down to several very, very capable and talented finalists that were interested in coming to work for the agency in this important role. After we had a chance to interview the finalists, and members of the Commission did as well, it's my great privilege to recommend to all of you that the Commission consider hiring Ms. Cindy Hancock. Cindy has a long tenure with this agency in the internal audit program. Several different times during her career, she's acted as the interim audit director. She brings a lot of competencies, a lot of capabilities. She knows the agency and people and programs well. And on behalf of the staff, I want to make the recommendation to you that you consider hiring her as your new director of internal audit.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there any discussion or do I have a motion? Second. Commissioner Hickson?
Second
by Commissioner Moran. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations, Cindy.
Thank you, Commissioners, for giving that vote of confidence as I take this position as Internal Audit Director. I can't express how excited I am to join the TPW team. Thank you. Sincere gratitude for this opportunity.
Thank you. We're happy to take this on and look forward to working with you. Mr. Smith.
That completes my report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All right. Action item 3, Recreation Trail Grants Funding, Mr. Andy Goldblum.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Andy Goldblum. I manage the Recreational Trails Program under the State Parks Division. The Recreational Trail Fund is federal funds coming from the gas tax generated by off-road vehicles, ATVs, dirt bikes, full-size vehicles, when they utilize those vehicles on off-road. The funds are distributed to the states based on population and gas tax generated. 2012 apportionment for Texas at this time is a little over $2.7 million. That's only 9 months of funding. The funds are tied to the Highway Transportation Bill, which really expired in October of 2009 and has been extended by Congress for a series of extended resolutions. So it's put the program a little bit in an uncertain funding situation, waiting for these next extensions to come along. So right now we're only working with 9 months of funding. We anticipate that runs through June 30th. We anticipate getting the additional 3 months worth of funding, which would be about another $900,000 for the program. We utilize about $200,000 a year for project administration. And this year we also have about $573,000 funds from previous years available for redistribution from projects. We had a few that failed, never got off the ground. We had a number of projects that came in under budget that generated those additional funds. We got 82 project proposals submitted this year requesting $11.5 million, which is a record in both categories. We have the law requires the state to have a state trails advisory board that helps guide the program. We utilize that board to help evaluate these proposals. We met in March and evaluated the proposals based on their quality, geographic distribution, the amount of recreational opportunities being created, and bang for the buck. We also utilize this fund to improve state park trails. We utilize about $485,000 a year. We have a funded trail crew that made of the AmeriCorps program that works in the various state parks. This next year, they're going to be working in restoration of Bass Drop trails that were burned out in the fire. They've done great work up to this point rebuilding some of the bridges. And actually rerouting some of the trails there, getting those back open to the public. Expanding the, we have one little OHV area up in Eisenhower State Park that's been in existence for decades. We've only about 20 acres. The park was able to add 50 acres to that from the Corps at no cost, and so we're expanding that opportunity into those additional acres. We also focus a lot on ADA improvements, making sure our trails are accessible. The motion in front of you, based on funds available at this time, is funding for 27 projects recommended in Exhibit A to the amount of $2,689,992, and state park trail improvements in the amount of $485,000 is approved. We'd also like to ask if additional funding is made available. Funding for additional projects based upon their score is also approved at this time. We probably will have funds to fund about another 4 or 5 projects if we get that additional 3 months of funding. Rather than come back to you, we'd like to get that approval at this time. We get in a crunch because where we don't find out that we have funds until the last minute, once those funds are appropriated, there's a real short time frame to obligate those funds to projects. There's such a focus on federal funding these days. Funds aren't obligated in a quick manner. Sometimes they're redistributed back to a different use, so we want to be ready to obligate those as soon as they're available. With that, if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer. We have a few people signed up to speak.
Any comments or questions? All right, we do have two people signed up to speak. The first is Bobby Sanders of the City of Childress. Mr. Sanders.
For the record, my name is Bobby Sanders. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Smith. This year we did a little something different. The lady that works the Parks and Wildlife came to us, Dana Wright, and asked if we could do the State Wildlife Resource Management and Career Development at our park. And we accepted what she had put forth between us. On our day off, which is Monday and Tuesday, we had over 300 people come to our park to do their judging this year. It's, for a small town, that's quite an enhancement to our community. It also gave us a lot of exposure to people that didn't know we had a park up there. So, again, thank you, guys. Appreciate all you do for us.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. Any questions, comments?
We have a little deal here. Come out of the newspaper. Pass that around, and y'all can decide who gets to keep it.
Very nice.
Thank you.
All All right. I appreciate that, Mr. Sanders. Now, we'd like to hear from Alicia Stoll. I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
You did.
Welcome.
Hi, good morning. As you said, I'm Alicia Stoll. I'm the Parks and Recreation Program Manager from the City of Elgin. And we are so grateful you are considering this funding. We are one of the projects listed. And the project that is listed is something that we're hoping will be a great pathway and connection for the City of Elgin. And it will connect the Austin Community College Elgin campus to our local park. So we're very excited about it and wanted to say thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Is anybody else that wishes to speak in connection with item 3? All right. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Commissioner Hughes? Second by Commissioner Moyer. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, item 4, Dorothy Kuhlman, acceptance of land donation, Cameron County, 10 acres at the Ebony Unit, the Los Alamos Wildlife Management Area.
Good morning, for the record, Dorothy Kuhlman, Land Conservation Program. This is a small donation at the Ebony Unit of the Los Alamos Wildlife Management Area in Cameron County. It is mostly habitat. The unit itself allows for some hunting, but this 10-acre tract we use basically for the habitat value. So with that said, the staff recommends that the Parks and Wildlife adopts the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the Executive Director to take all necessary steps to acquire a 10-acre tract of land as an addition to the Ebony Unit of the Los Alamos Wildlife Management Area.
Comments or questions? So motion for approval. Scott, second. Dixon, all in favor?
Aye.
No opposition. The motion carries. Item 5, land sale, Brazoria County, 2.5 acres along the San Bernard River. Corky Kuhlman.
Again, for the record, Corky Kuhlman. This is the second viewing of this item. The sale of some inland or coastal fisheries tracts down on the San Bernard River in Brazoria County. This tract was acquired as a staging unit for our coastal offshore reefs program. Once it was purchased and studies done, it's found that the river silts in way too often. They had dredged it once and silted it back in, and the property is not suitable for uses which we had purchased it. We did hold a public meeting. There's no comment. There's been no comment either for or against this project of sale. And doing the advertising for the meeting, we had some people contact me interested in the purchase. So we have some potential buyers as we speak. So with that, the staff recommends the Texas Parks and Wildlife adopt the following motion. The commission adopts the resolution as attached on Exhibit A.
Any comments, questions? Your motion by Commissioner Boring, second by Commissioner Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
No opposition. The motion carries. Item 6, acceptance of land donation, Harris County, 2.5 acres adjacent to the Sheldon Lake State Park.
For the record, Corky Kuhlman, this is a donation, but it also is the granting of an easement at Sheldon Lake State Park Environmental Learning Center, Harris County. A local church has bought a tract of land adjacent to us. In order to develop the tract, they have to do something with their stormwater. They will build a distilling basin on their tract, but the tract of land that distilling basin will drain into Sheldon Lake. We are grateful for the water. It's something that we have done in the area for a local EMS fire station. We've let them drain into our area and a local high school. In this case, we have asked for a small buffer of land around their property and around the distilling basin. It's going to be about between 2.5 and 3 acres in exchange for letting them drain onto Sheldon Lake. They're going to make a donation of the 2.5-3 acre tract. Parks and Wildlife. With that said, the staff recommends the commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the Executive Director to take all necessary steps to accept the donation of 2.5-acre tract
and grant a drainage easement that shall be by the state park.
Any comments, questions? Move for approval.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Jones, second by Commissioner Dixon, all in favor.
Aye.
Any hearing no opposition, the motion carries. Thank you, Corey.
Thank you.
Item 7, land acquisition, Coryell County, Mother Nest State Park. Somebody needs bed hauling.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingworth, and I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item pertains to a recommendation to purchase 142 acres of land in Coryell County adjacent to Mother Nest State Park. It's right in the heart of Texas. Mother Nest is the oldest designated state park. It's not far outside Waco, Killeen, Temple, that area. Acquisition includes about a half mile frontage on the Leon River, and although it's only 142 acres, it's extremely high quality property for recreational values, natural resource values, cultural resource values. Will increase the size of that park by about 55%. As you can see in this drawing, it is on the river and it is tucked right up against the park. We've had this property under option for about a year now, waiting for the sale of the Fortress Cliffs Ranch, which you authorized a few months ago. That property contains land and water conservation federal funds, and because of that, we're required to reinvest those funds in recreational opportunities expeditiously, and so, which was the reason we had this one in the queue, and we're anxious to get it to you. As you can see in this picture, just a huge, huge rock shelter site. It's never been looted. One of the few in the region that, that the landowners have lived close enough to protect all these years. A half mile frontage on the Leon River, and I was told by someone from the Hill Country that this doesn't look like a river, but I'm from the Gulf Coast, and this looks like a great river to me. looks like a good place to wet a catfish line, in fact. Suitable for canoe and kayak use and for fishing. And, would triple the amount of frontage the park has on the river. We are ready to close. With your blessing, we're ready to close that acquisition. The sellers are not only willing, but they've been members of the Friends organization for many years and are very excited to see their properties added to the state park. With that, the staff does recommend that the commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 142 acres in Coryell County for addition to Mother Nest State Park. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? Mr. Jones?
Second.
Scott, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries. Item 8, acceptance of land donation, Aransas County, 80 acres.
Chairman, Commissioners, for the record, my name is Ted Hollingworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This is an item we're really excited to bring to the Commission. We've been working with the Nature Conservancy for several years to try and figure out how to acquire the Big Tree Ranch. It is right down the coast. It is contiguous with Goose Island State Park. And it wraps around the Big Tree, which is a feature that was actually acquired in the early 1930s because it's such an impressive tree. And in fact, it was recognized as the state champion live oak tree up until very recently when an equally large tree was discovered in Brazoria County. The tree is quite vulnerable. It sits on a 5-acre site that's connected to the main body of the park by a scenic driveway. This particular ranch wraps around that tree and that 5 acres that protects it. The property is prime real estate for development. It's been on the market, and because we've been working closely with the Nature Conservancy and had an opportunity to propose to the Attorney General's Office and the Department of Justice that this be acquired as partial compensation to offset MOEX's culpability in the Deepwater Horizon spill, we were able to get that in front of the court, and the court has agreed that it is appropriate. MOEX likes the acquisition. They have a contract to acquire, and with your authorization, we expect that to we expect that federal process to be completed in the next few weeks, and we would expect probably in July to add this piece of property to the state park. Again, I want to emphasize that without the Nature Conservancy, having already done the appraisal work and the survey work and having already been working hand in glove with us on this project, we would have not been able to get it in front of the court on such short notice to take advantage of this opportunity. So we're really excited about it. Probably the best place on the planet for somebody in an automobile or somebody with limited mobility to see working cranes. A very mature gallery live oak forest on the property. Not much of this left on the coast. Extremely important for migratory songbirds. I'm very excited about adding that to the park. And as I said, everything is set up and ready to go. Should occur in a few weeks with your authorization. And with that, staff recommends that you adopt the following motion. The executive director is authorized to accept the donation of approximately 80 acres of land adjacent to Goose Island State Park for addition to the state park. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Motion to approve, Commissioner Hughes. Scott, all in favor?
Aye.
In opposition? Motion carries. Action item. Let me ask one question, Ted. Do we have plans regarding these old improvements? I think you said yesterday.
We've done only a cursory evaluation of those. We do not believe they have the structural integrity. They're from the 60s. We don't believe they're worth reusing, right? But again, what we're going to do is a complete public use plan, public use process, before we determine whether to remove those buildings, whether to try to adopt or use those buildings. There is a hangar, a smaller plant hangar on the site that might make good storage for equipment. Again, our primary concern is that it is designated critical habitat for the whooping cranes. And so whatever we do, we want to do very cautiously in such ways to not compromise the use of the site by the birds.
Action item 9, request for easement, Harris County, hydrocarbon pipeline at the San Jacinto Battleground State Historic Center.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item is in response to a request from Chevron to add two pipelines to an existing corridor for San Jacinto Battleground, as everyone knows, is just east of downtown Houston, on Houston Ship Channel. It is surrounded by industrial development. As such, there are three or four significant pipeline corridors that traverse the park. Chevron owns one of those corridors. It currently has five pipelines in it. They have a need to add two additional pipelines. And looking at that corridor and working with them and talking to the Historical Commission, it was determined that the safest way to do that was to expand that existing easement to give them just enough room to add those pipelines by directional drilling. Any area that is disturbed will be thoroughly tested for archaeological resources. There will not be any valve stations or other infrastructure visible on the surface once that project is finished. This shows the specific route through the park of that new easement. The expanded easement shows the three bore pit locations required to directionally drill those lines. Cultural and natural resource inventories are underway. We're still working on the protocol for testing at the bore pit locations. Coordination with the Corps of Engineers and any other regulatory requirements is also underway. We provide all the information that we have to the State Historic Preservation Officer at the Texas Historical Commission, and they're reviewing that to determine if any further evaluation or any further testing is going to be required beyond what we've recommended. Geotechnical soil testing, in other words, soil bores to determine the consistency of those soils, identify historic soil horizons, should take place in the next few days. And during the course of this project, we took advantage of the opportunity to survey highway, which corresponds to the existing easement for the pipelines, to survey the location of those existing pipelines, to survey the park boundary. In so doing, we did determine that one of those pipelines strays out of that right away and into the park. And you've heard a request to
solicit public input on that. Yesterday, we also have mapped all those pipelines to the extent we can. There's about a 700-foot stretch where those pipelines pass under the marsh. We don't have exact locations for them. Those pipelines are located by probing. The surveyor did put people in the marsh in those soft, unconsolidated soils. They can probe about 10 feet. Those pipelines quickly pass down below that 10-foot horizon. They followed them as far as they could. They know where they enter the marsh. They know where they leave the marsh at the beach side. We don't know exactly where those pipelines are. We assume they're in a relatively straight line. The surveyor did attach a note to the survey stating that to locate those pipelines would require putting a trap hoe in the marsh, excavating down to the part where they could locate those with a probe. Staff recommends that that's more impact to the marsh than justifies knowing exactly where those pipelines are, although we're certainly open to recommendations from the commission in that regard. The engineer, project manager, and consultant are here today if you have any specific questions you'd like to address to them. Otherwise, the staff does recommend that you adopt the following motion. The commission adopts the resolution attached to Exhibit A. I would add that we did get one comment. We got a letter from the San Jacinto Battleground Conservancy asking staff to note that every one of these infrastructure projects is a compromise of the historic integrity of the site. They also feel like the project should be subject to Section 106, which is the federal cultural resource review process. I've encouraged the author to work directly with the Historical Commission to make sure that this project and any of our sites meets both the letter and intent of all regulatory authority that's applicable. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments, Mr. Jones?
Just a couple. Tim, what is the risk of not knowing exactly where the pipeline is for the one that, I guess it's one, I assume it's just one.
Actually, there are a couple of actually, none of them. All of them have sunk below that 10-foot. So there's two pipelines from the 1920s, I believe, and then three additional pipelines, the last one of which was put in 1969. We know where they leave the uplands, and then we know where they come out of the uplands 700 feet later. It's that 700-foot reach under the marsh. My own opinion is that there is not any risk if anyone else were to propose anything intrusive in the marsh. We would have to locate those pipelines, obviously. If there's ever a leak, if there's ever... And when I say leak, those pipelines are all picked regularly. So if there are anomalies, if there are weaknesses, if there's corrosion that's causing or risking those pipelines, then Chevron goes in and addresses those preemptively before they could excavate. Obviously, they would have to locate those. They would have to have Section 404 clean water permits, possibly even ESA, endangered species, taking assessments because of the species that live in that marsh. They would have to have an antiquities permit from the Corps of Engineers. Potentially, well, they would have. They'd have to have a Section 106 review because of the wetlands nexus with the Corps of Engineers and the EPA, and because the site's a designated National Historic Landmark. So a lot would have to take place before you could excavate in the marsh to get to those pipelines. If a leak were to occur, knowing where those pipelines are exactly versus knowing where they are within a few feet, I don't think would make any difference. You have to go to that location, excavate, remediate, replace those sections of pipeline.
Any further questions? I have one, and that's, you said that a couple of these pipelines were laid in the 1920s?
That's correct.
Are they still active?
The 1929 pipeline is active. It will be abandoned as soon as these two pipelines come online. I would have to ask the Chevron representatives if any what the oldest pipeline is that's still active in that corridor.
The reason I ask is that because of the age of the line and the area, I'm just curious whether you say they're picked regularly, but surely there's some life expectancy on a line of that nature in that area.
Yes, sir, and hence the desire to abandon that 1929 pipeline.
What about the, were there two or just one?
There is another 1920s pipeline in that corridor. I believe it is already abandoned, but again, I'd have to ask.
There's two that are.
Addressing that question, please, sir? Identifying yourself?
Yes, Commissioner Gary Scott with Chevron Phillips Chemical. Two of the lines that were the 29 crude oil lines are currently idle and not in use. There are two other lines that were put in the late 69, I believe. There were currently propylene in those lines and feedstock propane, ethane, and shield type products. Those two will be, they're currently active and will stay active. The other two will be replaced with this redirectional drill that Ted has talked about.
Well, when you say replace, they'll be abandoned.
Yes, they'll be replaced in this new position that's on the docket today.
But I'm saying two lines that you will abandon, you'll leave in place.
Yes, exactly right. We've evaluated the removal and the damage to the park, and it would be not acceptable.
Okay. Any other, Mr. Jones? Commissioner Jones?
The lines that are currently abandoned.
The lines that are currently abandoned, I think you tended to indicate there was at least one 1920s line, maybe another. Are they, do they have product in them?
No, sir. They've been hydrocarbon-free and clean, and we've tested several locations throughout the 15-mile stretch, and we have not detected any hydrocarbons in them.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Is there a motion for approval? Mr. Scott, second by Commissioner Dixon. All in favor?
Aye.
Hearing no opposition, motion carries. Thank you, Ted. Items 10 and 13 on the agenda have been withdrawn and will be placed on the agenda for the August 2012 meeting. So that takes us to item 11, Public Lands Proclamation, and to Linda Campbell. Welcome, Linda.
Good morning, commissioners. For the record, my name is Linda Campbell. I'm the Wildlife Division Program Director for the Private Lands and Public Hunting Program. And I'm here today to request your action on a couple of things. Establishing an open season on public hunting lands for the 2012-13 planning season, and authorizing public hunting activities on the state park. Parks for the 2012-13 hunting season as well. Establishing an open season on public hunting lands allows the department to hold public hunts during the upcoming hunting season, September 1st, 2012. Also, statute requires the commission to approve public hunting activities on lands of the state park system. In your commission booklets, you are provided with the proposed state park hunts on 43 units of the state park lands for the 2012-13 hunting season. There are a total of 1,688 hunt positions proposed on the parks. This represents a decrease of 154 over last year. And of these, 280 are youth positions, and that represents an increase of 9. This year, Curtis Creek State Park is returning to the program, and the Devil's River South Unit will be added to the public program. Devil's Sinkhole and Lake Texana will not be hunted in the upcoming season. A little background, preliminary hunt proposals were developed last fall through a joint effort by field staff of the State Park and Wildlife Divisions. Public hunting program staff maintains close communication with park staff to confirm the hunt recommendations and make needed adjustments. Most of the recommended state park hunts address management needs to control deer numbers and remove exotic animals and feral hogs. However, some of the hunts, which include hunts such as dove, quail, waterfowl, squirrel, rabbit, turkey, and javelina, are proposed to provide additional recreational opportunities. So staff is requesting approval of the following motions. The first one, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes an open season on public hunting lands to run from September 1st, 2012 to August 31st, 2013. The second one, Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes public hunting activities maintained in September 8th, for some units on the state park system. And with that, thank you, and if there are any questions, happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Linda. We have one person signed up to speak in favor of this proposed motion. It is our friend, Mr. Kirby Brown of the Texas Wildlife Association. Welcome, Kirby. Thank you. Are you on 6th Street, Commissioner Hughes? I tried to sneak out before they got really rowdy, but I didn't make it. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Kirby Brown, the Texas Wildlife Association. Our members own and steward almost 40 million acres in Texas, and we're very proud that the department continues these public hunting activities on both the WMAs, lease lands, and state parks. This is great to provide that recreational opportunity, and we're very proud of the increased emphasis on youth hunting in all the areas. Thank you for your leadership in this area, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Curry. We appreciate all TWA does to help support our mission. Any comments or discussion? Motion for approval, please. Okay. Commissioner Hughes, Commissioner Scott, all in favor?
Aye.
Hearing no opposition, the motion carries. Thank you, Linda. Item 12, floating cabins permit rules. Cody Jones.
Good morning, Terry. Commissioners. For the record, my name is Cody Jones. I'm a Lieutenant Game Warden in the Marine Enforcement Section and Administrator of the Coastal Floating Cabins Program. I'm here this morning to present the proposed changes to the regulations governing permitting floating cabins. Under current regulations, all floating cabin permits expire August 31st of each year, and the renewal materials must be submitted before this date. However, I should point out the language also allows an additional 90 days after expiration for the renewal. This causes some confusion. If a permit is not renewed by the end of the 90 days, then the permit becomes ineligible for renewal and the cabin must be removed at the owner's expense. Under the proposed changes to the regulation, a referral to the original regulatory deadline is eliminated since it is no longer necessary. Additionally, the language is clarified to state that the deadline for submission of renewal materials would be 90 days from the date the permit expires, rather than before the expiration date. Third, the proposed language would state that upon the expiration of a permit, all permittees would be mailed a notice from the department, and they would be given an opportunity to request a review of expired permits within 10 days of the department's mailing. In addition, it creates a review panel made up of senior department managers, including the executive director or his or her designee, the director of the law enforcement division or his or her designee, and the director of coastal fisheries division or his or her designee. The panel would be able to review and make findings on their review, which is consistent with the wildlife permitting review process, which is already in place. And finally, elimination of any confusion, the term owner was changed to permittee to remain consistent within the rule. As of today, we've only received two public comments, one in favor and one opposed. The negative comment primarily focused on the deregulation of floating cabins to save state money for use in state parks. At this time, staff recommends that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the amendment to 31 Texas Administrative Code, Section 55.202, concerning the period of validity and the renewal and transfer of permits, with changes as necessary to proposed text as published in the April 20th, 2012 issue of the Texas Register. With that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them this time.
Any questions or comments? Motion for approval.
For approval.
Mr. Jones.
Thank
you. Commissioner Hickson, all in favor?
Aye.
Hearing no opposition, the motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, that concludes our business, and I declare us adjourned. We look forward to seeing everybody in August.
Okay.